Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, that was Black Sails Western Shores with Hard Times. Like I said, you can download that for free. Actually, it was their only album at Death of False Hope Records. You know, a lot of you can tell a lot of influence with the bands like Thrice and Hot Water Music and such. We're going to move on now to Vancouver, Canada band Death Sentence. They're a punk band that had a huge following in the 80s in Vancouver, Canada, in the punk scene there. They're also very popular in the Pacific Northwest across Canada. In 84, actually, they lost the Battle of the Bands, which would become legendary. They lost to a band that would later become the Nerve Tubes. But the fact they lost and came in second, the fans started a riot. With members from bands like The Fits and The Avengers, they actually broke up in 91. They reformed last year with Dan Scum as vocals after Pete Cleaver died of a drug overdose in the mid-90s. This is Death Sentence with Live to Die. Sorry, guys, I had the mic off. That was Death Sentence with Live to Die. Ogden, Utah's Hi-Fi Murder has picked up where they left off. After a short hiatus left the boys of Hi-Fi Murder yearning for more musically, they reformed last year and have built a steady following ever since. You can check the boys out of Hi-Fi Murder on Facebook. They're a very good band. Lyrically, I really like these guys. I've seen them live here a couple times. This is Hi-Fi Murder with That's Life. Whoa. Okay, that was Hi-Fi Murder with That's Life. Another Northwest band was Portland Wipers. When Greg Sage started the band, he only intended for it to be a studio band and never played live. Shooting to record 15 albums in 10 years. When they formed in 1979, Better Off Dead came out in 79 and punk took notice. Thus started a really strange trip for the Wipers, with Greg Sage being the mastermind behind the band as well as doing a lot of the production and engineering himself. In fact, the Wipers actually turned down an opening spot for Nirvana in the 90s. Power in One was released in 99. They really haven't done much since, although they've never said that they've broken up. This is, well, the band is basically Greg Sage, but this is the Wipers with Romeo. We'll be right back. Okay, that was the Wipers with Romeo. Very good band that never really fit any one certain mold, but they were always really good and constantly reinventing themselves. Dave Smalley and Down by Law are currently on tour. The former frontman for DYS, Dag Nasty, and All, Dave has fronted Down by Law for about 12 years now. Supporting the Casualties on this tour, they whipped the crowd into a frenzy with their live show. A new label in DC Jam Records, the band released Champions at Heart, or will be releasing Champions at Heart, the 9th of August. This is off the forthcoming release. I got this, Dave gave this to me and gave me permission to play one of the songs. This is Homicide by Down by Law. Formed in 1978. They're known mostly, though, by the moniker of TSOL. Jack, Ron Emery, Mike Roach, and Tiny Bubs and Greg Kuehn are the current lineup of the band. Although occasionally active since 2009, there are rumors of a new album. They were one of the bands that were featured heavily in the movie Suburbia. This is TSOL with Dance With Me. Okay, Salt Lake City's, I'm sorry, that was CSOL with Dance With Me. Salt Lake City's Problem Daughter has become not only a staple on my show, but a staple on the punk scene as well here in Salt Lake. Originally a three-piece with Regan on bass, Shane on guitar, and Trey on drums, they just recently added Tyler Sisson from the Salt Lake City legendary street punk band Never Say Never as a second guitar. The band just hit the studio, and a forthcoming release is promised. You can check out the band on their Facebook page if you look up Problem Daughter, as well as their Bandcamp page where you can download one of their prior albums. I am eagerly awaiting their new album. I really like these guys. This is Problem Daughter with Breathe Comfortably.
Let's forget we're trying to fall in love all night. The second of your land would save us a matter of will. Let's get fucked up tonight. We're locked on the ruin side.
Comfortably, and like I said, you can find them on their Facebook or Bandcamp page. Orbro Sweden native Subways have released Broken Machines on the Warbird Entertainment record label, the label that boasts bands like American Werewolves, Stabbed in Back, Race Riot 59, and Car Bomb. They join a great group of artists on that label. You can check out Warbird Entertainment and Subways at warbirdentertainment.com. And of notes, Stabbed in Back is planning a European tour with Subways this fall. This is Subways with Rotten.
Questions. All as
Okay, that was Subways with Rotten. Never Say Never is an in-your-face, unapologetic street punk band from Salt Lake City. The four-piece has the heart of a lion and the music to back up their claims. The band is Drell on bass, Tyler on guitar, Cole on lead guitar, and Trevor on drums. Slated to play with the Pinkerton Thugs on July 30th, it will be an end to a hiatus for the boys. This is Never Say Never with Animal. They've been on hiatus for a little while, so I'm really looking forward to seeing those guys play live again. Gallows is a hardcore band from Waterford, England. After the first album caught Guerrett's attention, he then released the album in the U.S. on Epitaph. Around since 2005, they played the Warped Tour, Download Fest, Taste of Chaos, and the Reading Fest, in which on stage, Frank Carter, the singer, actually got a tattoo by Newfound Glory's Chad Gilbert. This is Gallows with Abandoned Ship. We'll be right back. that was Gallows. Gallows with Abandoned Ship. X is a Los Angeles punk band that started out in 1977. The first release by Danger House Records, Adult Books, is considered a classic by most punks, and by really any stretch of the imagination. Still around today, they performed at the Voodoo Experience in New Orleans last year. This is actually the B-side to Adult Books. This is We're Desperate by X.
Ouch. We're Desperate. John wrote that song.
Yeah.
When he lived in Venice, and he wrote it for me to sing. And it's really weird because at one point I started thinking, there's going to come a point when we're going to keep performing this song. People are going to go, sure, they're desperate. I just paid $6 to see this band. You know, they're not desperate. There's worse ways of being desperate than being poor.
But you don't have money right now. And so, yeah.
Well, we're not rich. We got enough money to pay our rent. And, you know, we bought the ink and the pens. Legendary Indianapolis punk band Zero Boys. Zero Boys really came out of nowhere in 1982 out of a scene from the Midwest that really wasn't known for a lot of great bands. When Vicious Circle actually came out, it took everyone by surprise because they didn't expect a lot from them. There was New York, Boston, Philadelphia, D.C., and then there was California, and there wasn't a lot in between. But there were bands brewing out there, like the Zero Boys and De Kreutz and Articles of Faith and the Effigies, bands like that. This is the Zero Boys with a song that has been covered time and time again. This is Zero Boys with Civilization's Dying.
The president and the big rock star who made a lot of money on the job.
Okay, that was the Zero Boys with Civilizations Dying. Those guys have actually been bootlegged quite a bit. Vicious Circle is actually has been quite a bit overseas. It was a very, very good album. We are about 13, 14 minutes away from having Monkey join us. Monkey, of course, is a legendary frontman for The Addicts. We will be taking questions if you'd like to call in and ask a question of Monkey. Right now, though, we're going to move on to some music. This is Dirty Filthy Mugs. Dirty Filthy Mugs just released a new album. This is the Dirty Filthy Mugs, though, with She's a Riot. Okay, that was LA's own Dirty Filthy Mugs. They're also on the DC Jam record label. The Mugs are Matt Wedgley, Ace Facial, Timbasil, Joey Travers, and Conk. They came through Salt Lake a little while ago, and they will be coming back to support their new album. When they do, I am definitely going to go because those guys are they're a good band. Unfortunately, when I came through Salt Lake last year, they played at a place that really doesn't do much promoting other than Facebook posts, which is bullshit. But Dirty Filthy Mugs, Stir the Pot, is coming out very soon, they will be touring to support that. They just recently finished a short West Coast tour, so we're going to move on now to a band that has been a great friend to the San Clemente Punk Show, Burns Like Fire. Burns Like Fire is out of Athens, Georgia. They're currently unsigned, but they're looking for a label. Good friends with Car Bomb. Burns Like Fire is really an aggressive melodic punk rock band that really have a good sound to them. This is Burns Like Fire with one of my favorite songs. This is Bring in the Haymaker. Okay, that was Burns Like Fire with Bring in the Haymaker. You can find those guys on Facebook. They're a very good band. They're unsigned currently, but they've been a great band, friend of the show. We're going to move on now to there's actually been a very disturbing article written about HR of the legendary punk band Bad Brains. It's in the Washington City paper. I'm actually going to post this on my Facebook page at San Clemente Punk. It's pretty disturbing. There's some accusations of schizophrenia and such. But, you know, what can't be really denied and argued is that HR really has had some, there's some real mood swings on stage, and there's just not the energy that he once brought to being the front man for probably the most influential punk band of all times. I mean times ever. Bad Brains were the ones that really stomped it out and brought fast speed guitars and lyrics to the punk world. And everyone cites them, everyone, even new bands, everyone cites them as an influence. This is Bad Brains with a live version of The Big Takeover. Okay, that was the Uncivil with Temporary. We are currently just awaiting a phone call from Monkey. He should be calling in shortly. So we're going to move on to another Salt Lake band, the Wheel Kills. The Wheel Kills actually made quite a name for themselves, but it seems like they have suffered the setback of children. They've had a lot of kids. And actually, Nika, the drummer, who is just an absolutely fantastic drummer, just joined the Crumb Bums. But this is the Wheel Kills with Malcontent. Welcome back to San Clemente Punk, proudly part of the Fightin' Words Radio Network here on blogtalkradio.com. Tonight we're joined by a legend in the punk world, Monkey, of the long-running Addicts. Monkey has fronted the longest-running punk band with original members still in the lineup. Starting out in Ipswich, Suffolk, England in 1975, the Addicts have become one of the most influential and longest-running punk bands of all time. Please join me in welcoming Monkey. Monkey, thanks so much for joining us tonight. How are you?
I'm good. That's my pleasure, Frank.
Great. Now, Monkey, first, could you introduce the band to us?
Well, there's myself, Pete on lead guitar, Kid on drums, Scruff on rhythm and guitar. We have Shahan on bass and Fiddle Dan on fiddle and keyboards.
So, Monkey, you were raised in England at a very exciting time, a time where music was evolving and very dramatic changes were taking place in the music world. How were you introduced to these changes?
Personally, I was introduced through just a close friend of mine. We were kind of what we used to call soul boys back in England. We listened to, like, David Bowie and that kind of stuff. And he disappeared one day and went to a festival, and he came back and... He was a punk rocker, and I thought that's cool, and I wanted to just—I was just into the look. I just thought it would be so much fun just to, you know, fuck around like that. So I really got into the fashion, if you will, before I'd even heard the music.
Oh, okay, all right. Now, were you always a singer, or did you ever play an instrument?
Well, some will say that I'm not even a singer now, I never learned to play an instrument. I did try, but I just don't have that, you know, natural ability like some people do.
Now, is there anyone in your family that you can point to really as your source of talent?
No, not really. My family were not musical. My dad would get up and sing a song in the pub now and again, but that's about it. So, I don't really consider myself a musician anyway, so, you know, and there were no performers in my family either, so I don't know where that comes from.
And nobody you can really say, hey, that's where it came from then?
No, well, my grandfather played the accordion. That's about the only musician in the family.
Okay. Now, how did you find yourself really drifting towards punk?
Pretty much the same way that every kind of, you know, working class kid did in England around 1976, 77. It was just an exciting thing to be involved with. And, you know, back then it was all about, self-expression, really. For me, it was just a great creative outlet.
Right. How did your family feel when you started drifting towards punk? Were you know, were they shocked? Were they appalled? Were they happy?
My mom wasn't too happy when I came home with purple hair the first time I kind of dyed it. But, you know, after a while, they were supportive. You know, they always said, well, you know, I mean, I wasn't as wild as, you know, some people. And they just supported me and said, oh, you know, you're still our son. It doesn't matter what you look like. And I actually, they, you know, they would back me up if, you know, people talk shit about me. I worked with my dad for a while. We worked in a brewery together. And, of course, all the other guys at the brewery would give him shit because, you know, their son would turn up each week with different colored hair, but you know, he basically just always told them to go fuck themselves. No.
Just,
now,
no, just right
now. Okay.
Sorry, guys. This is a live interview, so.
No, it's a cool thing for live radio. I've just got, I'm at the Roxy. And because we just did a video shoot next door, actually,
oh, okay.
You know, I parked at the Rainbow, and the guy's hitting me up for valet parking.
Oh,
geez. Okay. So, yeah, that's $7 I've just got to pay to talk to you.
Give me a second.
Hang on. Okay. I'll give him change now. Yeah, I got it. There you go. All right. Yeah, I'm looking at you. All right. Okay, back to it.
Okay. Now, Monkey, who were some of the bands you were listening to when you were a kid that really helped formulate your love of you know, not just music, but punk as well?
Mostly it was, yeah, glam rock, really. T-Rex and Slade and Sweet, and Gary Glitter, Cockney Rebel, those kinds of bands that had a, you know, a sense of kind of flamboyance and showmanship about them that I liked.
Okay. I read one someplace that you were a big fan of Mott the Hoople as well.
Oh, yes, yes. Shouldn't have forgotten them in that list. Yeah, yeah, they're a great band, yeah.
Now, how did you, yourself, Mel, Pete, the Kid, and Tim get together to actually start the Addicts?
Well, Kid, Pete, and I, we just met in a pub through a mutual friend, really, because he introduced us, because there were very few punk rockers in Ipswich at the time with, you know, where we were living, and so he thought it might be a good idea if we got together. So, you know, my introduction to those guys started there. They already had met Mel and were kind of just banging around in their front rooms or their garages, trying to form a band. So then I came along. Tim was actually, came along later. I think he was the second or third bass player, so he wasn't in the original lineup anyway.
So they were already trying to start a band. Were they looking for a vocalist, or did they have someone that you took over for?
Well, initially they auditioned my friend, the same guy that went to that festival and came back a punk rocker. So they auditioned him because he looked more the part, I guess. But he wasn't very good, really. So they asked me. And at the time I said no because I wasn't, I didn't have enough confidence, I guess. I said, no, I don't think I want to do that. But they asked me a couple more times. So had a few beers and had a go and just kind of stuck with it. And there wasn't really anybody else around they could ask anyway. So they just got stuck with me.
Now, when, depending on where you look, some say the original name the Addicts went by was the Afterbirths before becoming the Pins, and then some say it was Afterbirth and the Pins. Could you clear that up for us?
Well, we had this fake band called the Afterbirth that never played any shows. Again, it was me and my old friend Roy, he kind of started that, and then lots of people just said, oh, you know, we were in the Afterbirth. We never had any instruments, we never had any songs, we never played any shows. It was just we just went around saying we had a band called the Afterbirth, and then out of that, it, you know, when I met Pete and Kid, it became the Pins. So, yeah, so it's two, I know on some sites it says the Afterbirth and the Pins, It sounds like it's one band, but it wasn't. It was two. Actually, it was only one, because the Afterbirth weren't a band. The Pins were the only band, really.
Okay. Now, I also understand that the Addicts with two Ds was taken originally. That's why you guys dropped the one D. Is that correct?
I think that was part of it, yeah. Also, I just think we just couldn't spell very well back then either.
Okay. Now, Monkey, the Addicts borrow heavily from the Stanley Kubrick version of what the Droogies in the Anthony Burgess novel look like. How did you choose that look?
It just seemed to be a very obvious opposite to what everybody else was looking like, you know, black leather and black pants and spiky hair in the early 80s. We just wanted to look different and, you know, and it's just cool anyway.
Right. Now, had you seen the movie? I mean, was it a huge influence in England? It seemed to have a lot bigger impact in England and was more of a cult classic here. Was that movie something that really, you know, made an impact on you guys?
Yeah, because I think it spoke much more to the working class kids of England in some ways, you know, gangs roaming the streets and stuff like that, perhaps more than it would in the U.S. Obviously it's had an influence on the way, you know, the way we look and, you know, we often reference, you know, Clockwork Orange, you know, Nadsat language or, you know, scenarios in our lyrics. So, yeah, we still go back and you know, use that influence even today. I mean, our new album is called All the Young Droogs. We're still using it.
Now, how was the look accepted by the punk scene? Was there a little bit of shock at first, or was it, you know, did it instantly catch on?
I think it was accepted by, you know, by the fans. I mean, some of the bands, other bands, probably weren't, you know, punk rock enough, or, you know, we were a bit gay or something, I don't know, but, you know, the fans took to it pretty good. I mean, there were other bands around that, and, you know, a little later, like Major Accident and Blitz also used that look, so, you know, we weren't the only ones.
Right. You guys have kind of been credited as being the first band that really brought about, though, the Clockwork band. Do you kind of accept that, or do you think that, you know, you guys started something?
As far as punk rock bands go, I think we were probably the originators, but I mean, that look had been, you know, used by Cockney Rebel in the early 70s anyway, so it wasn't entirely original for a band to, you know, for us in a folk rock.
Okay. Now, your look, though, Monkey, is decidedly a bit different with the Joker look and the bowler in the jacket. How did you decide on that?
More of an evolution than a decision, really, you know, because, again, we wanted to be different and entertaining and kind of in your face, and so, you know, that just developed with, initially with just some makeup, and then the bowler came after that, and then I just started getting a little crazier and crazier with the clothes and all the other stuff, you know, really just to make it as much fun as possible, really, and, you know, and the devil's in the details, you know. If you make every little thing count, everything you do should mean something, you know, when you're on stage. That's what I feel anyway.
Right. Now, Monkey, I want to play a song right now. The song is Crazy by the Addicts. Could you tell us a bit about it before I play it?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, an observation on the scene that I think that was, you know, in the early 80s when it was kind of, you know, fading a little bit, and then basically the message behind the song was that, you know, no one's crazy anymore. What happened to all these, you know, mad guys who created this scene, and it all kind of just slowly kind of being like dissipated a little bit. There wasn't so much craziness around, and so it's like, well, where did all that go, you know?
Right. Okay. All right. This is The Addicts with Crazy.
Took care of ourselves.
Right. Now, when did you first get noticed by the Dining Out label?
That happened when we played our first ever show in London. We got booked into a pub, which is probably, again, kind of a wrong venue for us, but some people heard of it and they came down. It was a place called the Brecknock in, it was in Camden, I'm not sure. But Dave Henderson from Dining Out just came down to that show, and he liked what we saw, and we just took it from there. And actually, Dining Out have just released their a 30-year anniversary CD of all their bands, of which we're on.
Okay. Now, how soon after signing did you release Lunchtime with the Addicts, the 4-song EP?
I think that's actually called Lunch with the Addicts, but that came out pretty soon. Those guys came up to Ipswich, and we recorded it in the one recording studio that existed in Ipswich at the time, and this was, like, real old school. The engineers still had, like, white lab coats.
And, oh, wow.
Somebody just knocked it out there in probably a day or something like that.
So you only had really one recording studio in the whole town that could do that, you know, you guys could record at?
Yeah. And then when we came to do Songs of Praise, we found one kind of in this small town about 10 miles from Ipswich. It was actually quite close to where John Peel used to live. And so we went and did Songs of Praise out there. But really there was no other places to go around. Other than to go to London.
Okay. Now, I understand that EP actually sold about 10,000 copies and netted you guys a grand total of 23 pounds.
Well, I never got my cut of that 23 quid, so somebody owes me something.
Well, compounded interest, they owe you quite a bit now.
Yeah, maybe 24.
Yeah. Now, it was after that first EP that Tim left and Mel moved on to bass. Did that dramatically change the band's sound at all?
No, I don't think so. I think it actually solidified the sound of the band because we stuck with that, you know, that lineup and for quite a while. So I don't think it really changed too much. It probably helped us decide the direction we wanted, really.
Now, after the album, you had a recording session with legendary John Peel. How did that occur?
We had done a demo tape and sent it to him, just like everybody else did back then. And he played it, you know, over the course of a few weeks, and then basically just invited us down to the studios down in London in Maida Vale. And we went down and recorded a session for him. He wasn't there at the time, I don't think, but we did it with this great producer called John Sparrow, who, you know, really opened up our eyes as to, you know, what kind of sound we could create with, you know, the right people in the right studio.
So, well, that's interesting. I mean, that, you know, so that led to really the sound that you guys were looking for with. So, you know, it was pretty beneficial then.
I mean, that was a great thing for us. I mean, that was the first time we really thought we, you know, sounded like a real band, you know.
Right. Now, was it overwhelming when you guys got the call from John Peel and you know, they said they wanted you to come down and record?
I wouldn't say it was overwhelming. It was exciting. You know, you kind of take these things one step at a time, and as you build it as a band, something, I mean, if on day one we'd have been approached by John Peel, it probably would have been overwhelming, but, you know, having, you know, been playing for a couple of years and, you know, done some demos and a single, then it's not quite as, you know, as huge as it may have been, but, I mean, it's still a big step for us.
Now, in 81, the Songs of Praise studio album was released, and the Addicts scored a string of indie chart success. Was that overwhelming at all for you and the boys?
No, we just enjoyed it. I mean, it was good times. I mean, just for a bunch of naughty kids from a council estate in Ipswich, we just try to enjoy it as much as possible and, you know, take each day as it came.
Right. Now, what was the scene like that you played in at the time, the pubs and the bars and everything? I understand you guys became very adept at ducking pints and even dodging darts.
Yeah, we had a few missiles thrown at us. Darts, bottles, ashtrays, anything that would come to hand in a pub or a bar that would probably get thrown at you at one point.
Now, where were some of your favorite places to play early on?
Well, once we broke out of Ipswich, you know, we would play at the 100 Club on quite a regular basis, almost every month for quite a long time. So that was one of the cool places to play, and we start to meet other musicians, like, you know, from other bands, and you know, establish some relationships with those guys.
Right. Now, who were some of the bands that you were playing with early on that, you know, became really favorites of the band?
Well, we used to do a lot of shows with Max Splodge in the early days, which usually ended up in chaos, but that was always a lot of fun. So we've always been friends with Max ever since then.
Okay. Funky, I want to play another song from the Addicts. This time it is Who Spilt My Beer. Could you tell me a bit about it before we play it?
Well, we were very poor back then, and still somewhat poor now, and the idea of somebody knocking over your pint when you've got no money to buy another one was quite horrific at the time. So we just thought we'd write a little ditty about that.
All righty. Okay, this is The Addicts with Who Spilt My Beer.
Thank you.
Clemente Punk, proudly part of the Fighting Words Radio Network here on blogtalkradio.com. Tonight we're talking with Monkey, legendary frontman for the Addicts. If you'd like to talk with Monkey, please call us at 347-202-0832 or click on the free Skype link on the show's page. Monkey, again, it's a real honor to have you on tonight.
Oh, happy to be here. Well, there, wherever now, I am.
So, Monkey, how did the appearance on Cheggers Play Pop happen?
Well, we released the Bad Boy single, and that scraped into the charts at number 75 and probably went out again. And actually, that chart entrance made the an entry into the Guinness Book of Hit Singles as least successful chart act ever, which I'm quite proud of, actually. But because it, you know, in the initial week that sold a, you know, a decent amount of singles, then the label we were on at the time, Razor, managed to get us this spot. So we drove all the way up to Manchester and did this show, this kids show, and that's about it, really. We had to change our name, which was a bit of a fuck-up, but that's the only time we've ever been on television, actually.
Oh, wow. Now, so you guys changed your name to the Fun Addicts just for that show, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, we basically got there when we were ready to go, and some producer comes in and says, like, we've decided that your name is not appropriate for a Charles TV show. And so I think the manager, Julie, at the time said, well, we don't care. We'll call ourselves anything. We'll call ourselves the Fun Addicts. And before you knew it, that's who we were. So it was a bit silly, but who cares now?
Now, the nicknames, how did your nickname come about?
I've had that name since I was about, I don't know, 8 or 10 years old. There's one of my friends just decided to call me that. You may have not noticed, but my ears stick out a little bit, and so I had quite a few nicknames that were based around my ears, like F.A. Cup and Monkey Lugs and Monkey Ears, and then just the monkey part just stuck, really.
Now, you guys, the Addicts have actually been around for a very, very long time, since 1975, and you've seen a lot of punk acts come, a lot of punk acts go, and you've seen the scene change quite a bit. What difference would you say are the biggest from when you guys began until now?
I'm 53 now. It's quite a big change, so I don't jump around quite as much as I used to. I don't know. I don't really pay attention to the scene anymore. If there is one, I'm not really a part of that. Obviously, we're in a band and we go out and we play shows with, you know, punk rock kids. But, you know, I can't really speak to why they get into punk or what it is that, you know, is exciting about it for them. I know what it was for me, but what it's like for, you know, a 17-year-old today, I don't really know.
Right. Now, did you guys ever experiment with different sounds? I know that, you know, a lot of bands felt, you know, there was a need to change. Did you ever feel that there was a need for you guys to go in a different direction, or did you always, did you stay true to your sound just because that's what made the most sense to you?
Oh, we just stayed true to our sounds. We're not frightened to experiment with sound or direction, but we never really had any conscious idea about something specific we wanted to do. When we go to write, we write what we write, and what, you know, is whatever comes out. And then, okay, that's an Addict song. We don't have any preconceived notions of what it should be. We don't try to write a specific type of song or go for a specific sound. It just some of those things just kind of write themselves in a way.
Who does most of your writing? Do you do most of the writing for the band?
Pete and Kid write most of the music, and then I'll have some ideas about, you know, lyrics and stuff that I will develop, and I bring a lot of lyrics to the table myself, and it's a collaborative effort really between, you know, Pete Kidd and myself, and pretty much the way it's always been.
Now, do you are you one of those songwriters that, you know, you just get a do you write your lyrics first, or do you tend to get, you know, kind of the music in your head first?
I don't really have any music in my head. All when I do, it always seems to be the same tune anyway, because like I said, I'm not a musician, so I just like write lyrics like I'm writing poetry, really, and then we try to adapt them to, you know, love Kid or Pete's tunes. And that's kind of the way we just did it on the new album. We just kind of go into the studio and I'll just make it up as we go along, really.
Okay. All right. Now, have the band influences changed over time? Well, have your personal influences changed over the years? And concurrently, has the band's influences changed over the years?
I don't think you can necessarily avoid influences, because we all listen to different types of music. We all have, you know, different tastes. So that kind of that creeps in there subconsciously. Sometimes, you know, you find yourself, like as we did in the studio with a couple of tunes, we were just recording something and realized, oh, you know, that actually sounds like somebody else. We better not do that. We'll have to change it. So, and you can't help things seeping into your psyche, but we don't. There isn't a you know, specific influence that we could pinpoint and say, okay, that, you know, that pushed us in a certain direction.
Right. Monkey, I have an email question that was sent in. Trevor from Salt Lake asked about the repressing of the fifth Overture album on vinyl. It's been listed as the rarest and most sought-after Addicts vinyl, and you've repressed it twice on CD since, but not on vinyl. Is there any plans to repress that on vinyl?
Not that I'm aware of, but I'm sure somebody out there might be thinking about bootlegging it, so look out. But no official repressing yet, but, you know, that's a good idea. Hey, you still there?
Oh, sorry, I lost for a second. Now, Monkey, it's been a very big year for the Addicts, with an appearance at Punk Rock Bowling and a new label. How did you come to choose DC Jam Records as your new label?
Well, we hooked up with them through our management company, and I suggested, you know, we talked to them and kind of their little background and see what they've done with some of their other bands. You know, they're a new, ambitious label. We like Darren's attitude and his, you know, his vision. And we're hoping that, you know, it works out well for all of us, really, and it'll give us an opportunity to, you know, hopefully get the new album to a wider audience and the existing audience, you know.
Now, Monkey, what do you attribute the longevity of the band to? I mean, you guys have been around for many, many years. What do you attribute that longevity to?
I don't know. That's difficult to say. I mean, we just, you know, we still love what we do. We get a lot out of it. We have a lot of fun. Sometimes it's pretty tough touring and traveling, and, you know, we're not a major band, so we have to, you know, we have to rough it sometimes, you know, just, you know, in a van, crashing wherever we can, not crashing the van literally, but, you know, crashing to sleep or whatever, but it's just that, I don't know, just that the love of the music and the love of performing and the, you know, the feedback we get from the people that we meet on the road. I mean, it, you know, without all those good vibes, then it makes it much, much harder to do.
Right. Now, who are some of the bands that you enjoy playing with more so than others now? Like, who are some of the bands that you, you know, that not only yourself, but, you know, the boys enjoy playing with?
Well, we don't, you know, the only time we get to play with other bands, like contemporaries, if you will, is at the festivals, and some of that is not so much just getting to play with them. It's just getting to hang out with him.
Right.
We, you know, we only see, you know, we might see the Colony Rejects once a year, so we, you know, we have a beer and we talk about football and stuff like that, or the same with, you know, maybe Test Tube Babies or Andy Nowell League or something like that. You know, we just run into them at, say, you know, at Punk Rock Bowling or Rebellion Festival or somewhere like that. So, you know, it's not so much about, well, for me, you know, watching the bands, it's just hanging out, really.
Right. Now, you guys did play Punk Rock Bowling this year. Was there anybody that you were really impressed with?
Well, we went to see the Cogni Rejects from the club show they did, but we got backstage, but we couldn't actually get into the show, so I can't give you an opinion on that. And the only other bands I did see was a little bit of The Breach, which were always good, English Beat,
yeah,
which I'd never seen before, and actually No Effects I'd never seen before, and I really enjoyed those guys.
You've never seen the English Beat before?
I've never seen the English Beat. Oh, no.
Huh. Now, the Addicts did play this year's Punk Rock Bowling in a town you're very familiar with. Is Vegas a favorite spot for the Addicts?
Well, it's a favorite spot for us to go and have fun, yeah, of course. But actually, there, in our experience, there aren't that many good venues to play in Vegas that are all ages. And that's
right.
You know, that's the various shows that we always try to do, and it seems to be hard to do in Vegas. I mean, the last time we played there was in a casino, 21 and over, and we played at the Hard Rock a couple of times again, 21 and over. So yeah, doesn't seem to be a great deal of you know, suitable spaces there, but you know, it's always fun anyway.
Now, would you say that the Addicts are like a lot of not just punk bands, but bands in general, you'd much rather play an all-ages show than a bar show?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. You know, we don't want to exclude anybody, and we do have a young fan base, you know.
Right. But at the same time, you have a lot of fans that are older as well. What's it like to be, you know, playing, especially like in Punk Rock Bowling, and knowing that there's fathers that have their sons, and maybe even sometimes grandfathers that have their sons and grandkids there watching you. Is that, you know, how does that feel? How does that make you guys feel?
I think that's wonderful. I mean, you know, kids, you know, don't always accept what's forced on them by their parents. You know, sometimes you rebel against that, but it's cool that, you know, those kids and grandkids are growing up and listening to the Addicts. I mean, we're an accessible band for the kids because of the look, and we don't have a hardcore sound. So I think that's something that, you know, the kids can get into quite easily.
Right. Now, Monkey, we are actually joined right now by Pete. Pete, thanks for calling in. How are you today?
Hey, how you doing? I'm good, thanks.
Good.
Now, hey, Monkey.
Hey.
Hey, can you hear me all right?
I can hear you more than all right, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry for shouting.
Yeah.
Right now, I was lucky enough to catch you guys at Punk Rock Bowling, and I actually talked to Monkey and Kid D. Pete, it's a real honor to have you on as well. I understand you're in the studio currently.
Yeah, I'm in the studio. They're mixing. You know, they've got another at least 4 or 5 days to go, I think. You know.
Okay. Now, what can we expect from you? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said it's going really well. Do you want to have a listen? Here you go.
Absolutely.
Man.
Yeah.
So it's all sounding good in here.
Now, Pete Monkey, this question's really for both of you. What can we expect from the new album?
Oh, well, Monkey hasn't heard it yet, so what he can expect is a surprise. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of good things on this album. It's very intriguing. It's almost sexy as well.
It's infectious and sexy, but that doesn't mean it's like a disease. It's a good infectious sexy.
It's pretty sexy. It's got something going on, man. You know, it's fascinating. Mm.
Yeah. Now, when can we expect that to be released by DC Jam?
September the 11th.
Is that when it comes album? Excellent.
Yeah, no significance in the date whatsoever. But.
I can't wait. What a good date that is. I'll be first one queuing up for it.
Now, will you guys be touring to support it?
Yeah, we are. We're doing about 14 shows in the U.S. starting on September the 6th, and then we're going from there. We're going down to South America.
This is kind of for both of you. This question is for both of you. What are your experiences like in South America? In other bands that I've talked to, they say it's just nuts down there, that there can be 20,000 people at a show. None of them speak English, but all of them know the words to your songs.
Well, that's the same everywhere we go. Even in England, they can't speak English, but they know the words. That's great, South America. I love it. Yeah.
Where do you plan on going in South America?
Did you say where or when?
Where?
We're going to Brazil for 3, possibly 4 shows, and then we're still waiting confirmation of perhaps Chile and Argentina.
Okay, all right. Now, when you guys tour, is it difficult to really get everything together and just, you know, kind of strategically work out your tours in foreign countries? I mean, do you have to fly a lot of those places, or do you drive just like you would in the U.S. or England?
Well, usually in South America, there's not a huge amount of shows that you can do, so you don't really tour from city to city in a bus or a van, so you tend to fly in, do 2 or 3 shows in Brazil, and then fly to Argentina, do a show or two, and then to Chile or Colombia or Venezuela. So, yeah, it's a little different.
We always end up in Panama.
Okay. I've been to Panama. Not a great place.
They got shit big.
Now, with 9 studio albums, 3 live albums, and a ton of compilations and singles, is there any one album that stands out for both of you that you're more proud of than any other?
Wow, there's going to be the new one.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. When you say the new one, was this something that, you know, when you guys got it done and Pete, now that you're mixing it, is it just, does it just seem like lightning in a bottle? I mean, when you guys started listening to this, you're like, yeah, this is really it.
No. It's hard work. I mean, the way we have to do things, you know, we don't practice, so we can't practice new songs. So we have to come in and just hope and pray that they're going to work, you know. And they're working, you know. I'm very happy. We're going to be very happy with this album, and I think the fans are going to love it. They're going to really, really enjoy this album a lot, you know. Probably our best work, you know.
Now, when you guys go into, and Monkey touched on this earlier, Pete, when you guys, is it strange to see all of the, you know, everything that's really the technology and how it's come together from, you know, he said that the first time you guys recorded that the guys were still wearing lab coats. Is it, you know, having seen all that, is it a little strange?
Yeah, not for me, because I learned how to develop, you know, so I moved along with it, you know. But, yeah, I mean, it is strange, especially for Kid, our drummer. He doesn't even own a cell phone. You know, so, yeah.
Kid doesn't? Really? I didn't know that.
No, he doesn't even have a computer of his own either. You know, he doesn't have anything to do with things like that. And that's cool, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, but the technology today is quite astounding, really, because you know, we like to have the backing tracks here in Orange County, and then sent over the files to Shahan, who's in Madrid, and he recorded the bass over there and sent it back again. You know, so mm-hmm. it's quite remarkable what you can do these days.
It is. It's great. You know.
I didn't know that.
It's exciting. It really is. You know. So he doesn't play it right. So we have to send it back and tell him to do it again with a different technique. You know, and that's how we've been doing things. Right now, kids in the studio singing a song in England. You know, to send the vocal track back because it wasn't right when he was here. So we're doing it again. You know. So, you know, it all works out kind of cool in the end. It has its advantages, you know. You know, but it's a lot to learn, isn't it? You know.
Right, right. Now, how do you guys feel? You know, you feel it's easier to reach fans now with the technology. You know, certainly with the internet, it's easier for them to listen to your music and stuff. Do you find more ready-made fans now when you go to shows?
Yeah, I think it's obviously easier to reach out and reach a wider audience, and you know, easier for people just to pick on something or at least try it. But rather than back in our day, you had to walk down to the record store and thumb
right.
through a little section of punk rock singles just to find something you liked. You know, at least you've got more options out there, and so yeah, it's easier to find something.
Now, what can we expect from the Addicts, you know, coming up? I know you guys have a tour. You also have a new record coming out on DC Jam. Is there anything else? I understand you guys are going to be shooting a video.
Yeah, we'll probably do that once we've decided on what song we want to shoot. And, you know, I'm not sure when that's going to happen, but that's coming up. Because, like I said before, we've really ever been on TV once, and then we've never actually made an official Addicts promo video. It's always just been, you know, bits we've done ourselves and posted on the website or whatever. There's never been an official Addicts video.
Right. Now, do you,
so who the hell wants to see us on the video anyway, you know?
Well, I didn't say you were going to be in it.
Oh, all right, good. I want to be.
You're just going to be Monkey.
Zoom in on me, Margarita.
Not me either.
Yeah, none of us are going to be in it. Excellent.
Right. We won't play on it either. It won't be our song.
No, it won't be.
Now, you guys were touching on it a bit, but you guys don't, you know, you're really an international band. Some of you live overseas, some of you live here in the U.S., but somehow it works for you. How does that, I mean, you guys are still great friends. I mean, and that's the longevity is evident that, you know, you guys are still great friends. How did you guys manage to stay like a, you know, a non, you know, aggressive family?
We've had our ups and,
yeah.
You know. We like everybody else, you know. But, you know, it's hard.
Yeah, sometimes we get in the fights, but we get in the fights, not the physical fights, but, you know, discussions and about things we care about. So we always just try to make things, you know, better for ourselves and, you know, better for the band. So sometimes those things, you know, have to be thrashed out.
Yes, they do.
Now,
but we do. We've been through a lot of stuff together in our, you know, career together. I mean, we're just one big family now. You know, we're closer than we've ever been. And we realize we mean a lot to each other, what we've been through, you know.
Oh.
Now, did you guys ever imagine back in 1974, 75, when you guys first started as, you know, first...
I haven't even left school yet.
74, 75. God, I can't remember that far back.
Now, when you guys first started out, you know, as the Addicts and then the Pins, did you ever imagine that, you know, all these years later, you would still not only be a band, but one of, you know, the most influential punk bands of all times, as well as the longest running punk band, Did you ever imagine that, you know, kids would still be just piling into places to see you guys play?
No.
Well, that's very kind of you to say so. No, we never imagined, did we, Monk? You know?
No, you don't think about the future much when you're 17, do you?
No. All we thought about was having a good drink and getting laid and having fun, you know. That was it. But we suddenly realized, I think, that we had something special between us on the stage. And it might not have been very good back then, but it certainly is now, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I agree 100%.
I think with us hanging around this long, you know, keeping it together has done us justice, you know. It's nice.
Now, guys, it's been a real pleasure getting to know you tonight, Monkey and Pete, and I want to thank you for joining us. We are in the last few minutes of the show, but I want to give you guys an opportunity to let us know where we can find the Addicts online, where we can get Addicts merchandise, and, you know, what we can really expect from the new release, and, you know, you already said it's coming out September 11th.
I'm going to play this, and I'm getting back to work.
And I'd also like to give you guys any, you know, a chance.
Still near you, very shortly, Monkey Callum. I'm getting off here. Pleasure meeting you, mate. I better get back to work. Talk to you later, Monkey.
Okay.
Oh, cheers.
Thanks, Pete. Monkey, I want to give you a chance to, you know, tell us where we can find the Addicts online. The floor is yours.
That's a good question. Is it addicts.us, I think? I'm really not the webmaster of the band, you can just do the usual search. You'll find it.
Right.
John the Punk is the webmaster guy. He's the guy that puts all the cool stuff up there. So it's out. And we have a Facebook page, and there's an Addicts, there's a fan club page, and there's like an unofficial Addicts page, but we're in the process of merging those two together so everyone can be under the same roof.
Okay.
And that's, you know, that's about it. We'll be hitting the road in September, and hope to see everybody there.
Okay. Monkey, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a real pleasure. I really appreciate it.
All right.
I'm going to finish out tonight with Joker in the Pack. Could you tell us a little about it before I play it?
I think it's self-explanatory. It's just about, you know, being the one guy that stands out from the crowd, really, and it gives me an opportunity to throw loads of cards around.
Okay. Monkey, thank you so much, and I'll be in touch. I really appreciate it.
All right, you're welcome. It is your
thing. Okay, thanks. Guys, I'm going to finish out tonight with Joker in the Pack. There won't be a San Clemente Punk next Monday due to a show, but the week after I'm going to have one of the guys from Jawbreaker on as my guest. Thank you so much for listening. As always, San Clemente Punk and all shows on the Fight Words Radio Network are in the memory of my brother, Robert Anthony Carroll, who we lost last June. We miss you. We all miss you desperately, Bob. This is the Jokers tonight with Addicts in the Pack, or the Addicts with Joker in the Pack.